Raghunath Das Goswami, of course, was an eternally liberated soul. But yet, during the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, during Mahaprabhu's Leela, Raghunath Das was so attracted. He first became attracted to Harinam and Mahaprabhu when he met Haridas Thakur in his home in what is now Bangladesh. And after that time, he wanted to attain the shelter of the feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and give up material life completely. His parents were so wealthy. His uncle and brother, Govardhana and Haranya Majumdar, were big landlords, and they had unlimited wealth practically. They were making thousands and thousands and thousands of rupees a month. And when Raghunath wanted to become a renunciate and attain the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, Raghunath would run away, and his parents would send men out and capture him and bring him back. Again and again, practically a daily affair, this would happen. Raghunath would run away, and he'd try to attain the shelter of Mahaprabhu's feet, and people would come and capture him and bring him back. Finally, he heard that Nityananda Prabhu was nearby in Panihati. And he went there, and from a far distance, he paid his obeisances to Nityananda Prabhu. And when Nityananda Prabhu was informed that Raghunath had come, he tried to get him to come closer, but Raghunath wouldn't come closer, feeling very humble and shy. So Nityananda brought him forward forcibly and said, "You are hiding from me. That means that you are a thief, or else why would you hide? And as your punishment, you will have to feed all of my associates, have a big festival, and feed all my associates chipped rice and dahi." So Raghunath was so happy to get this order from Nityananda Prabhu. He had the famous Panihati festival. And then at the end of the festival, which was so sweet, and even Mahaprabhu himself came and took prasadam with Nityananda Prabhu. And some of the devotees could even see this. And at the end of that time, at the end of the festival, Lord Nityananda kindly placed his feet upon the head of Raghunath Das and benedicted him that he would attain shelter at the feet of Lord Nityananda. He said, "Go home and very soon you will attain the shelter." So it is by the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, Nitai, that one attains the mercy and shelter of the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu is represented by the spiritual master, Guru, and Gauranga. Gauranga is, of course, Mahaprabhu. So by the mercy of Guru, or Nitai, one attains the shelter of the feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his very kind benediction, which no one has ever given before, the thing that is most difficult to obtain, service at the feet of Radha and Krishna, becomes easy if one obtains the mercy. We have read yesterday how Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, and Krishna practically wouldn't even instruct Arjuna until he surrendered. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is even more merciful. Namo Maha Padanaya Krishna Vimapadaya. He is even more merciful than Krishna because he will give his mercy to anyone, surrendered or unsurrendered. There is no prerequisite. Patita pavana hetu tava avata mosama patita prabhu na paiveya. But one just has to be in a very humble and meek mood and pray for the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda, and Guru. And then, by their grace, we will make advancement. We will gradually come closer and closer to serving Radha and Krishna. But here, at a different time, of course this is an eternal pastime in the material world, but at a different time, Arjuna has just surrendered to Krishna as his student. And Krishna begins to dispel his illusion. Arjuna has thought so many logical, scriptural, and other thoughts, but the result of his thinking is confusion. So therefore, he has surrendered to Krishna. And Krishna, at that point, prahasan means light smiling, because he accepts him as his student, and he begins to instruct Arjuna, who is grief stricken. Why is he grief stricken? Yes. He is in illusion. He is making improper calculations as to what he should do and why he should do it, and therefore he is bewildered and confused, and he's grief-stricken for that reason. So Krishna begins his instructions. That's like when we go to school, the first thing we learn is A. A, B, Z, A. So Krishna begins his instructions with A. Asochan. Asochan anvasochas tam. Pragya varam shabhasya se. Gatasun agatasun sta. Nano shochanti pandita. Repenting for those things which are not worthy of being lamented about. Pragyavarams Shabhasase. You are speaking as if you were a learned scholar. But learned scholars who have knowledge would not lament about the things that you are lamenting about. Why? Gatasun, agatasun sta. Neither for when one is alive, when the soul is in the body, alive, or when the soul has left the body, and one is called dead. Nanu sochanti pandita. That there is no reason to lament in either case, in life or in death, because the soul, you, me, as Krishna will later explain, everyone, we, the people within the body, the person within the body, are eternal. So Krishna says, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. That means the body. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. So the first thing is that Krishna slaps Arjuna again by saying, you are speaking as if you are a learned man. But learned people would never say the words that are coming from your mouth. In other words, you are a fool. Intelligent people don't speak the way you are speaking. Because you have made so many discriminations. You have made so many logical reasons for fighting or not fighting. But you have forgot the basic principle of reality. And that is the soul. It is not the body that is important. It is the soul. Then, next verse, also a very important and famous verse. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janadipaha nachayvana bhavishyama savevayam ataparam. Never was there a time, Krishna says, when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, because they're on a battlefield, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So here is the point. Krishna is speaking in the present tense, in the present to Arjuna. And at the present, he exists. At the present, the kings exist. And at the present, he himself, Krishna, exists. Arjuna, Krishna, and all the kings exist at the present. And in the past, never was there a time when the kings, or you, or me, Krishna says, didn't exist. So in the past,
we all existed as individuals. In the present, we exist as individuals. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. This verse, right in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, in and of itself, defeats Mayavadi philosophy. Because Krishna is saying that we are individuals. He is stressing the individuality of the soul. And if Krishna is the supreme, which is the given, anyone who is reading Bhagavad Gita must accept Krishna as the supreme, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, or else what would be the purpose of reading the Bhagavad Gita? Unless he is beyond the modes of material nature, beyond ignorance. What would be the purpose of reading the Bhagavad Gita? So if Krishna is beyond ignorance, if the Mayavad philosophy were true, then he would be merged. He would have ceased to exist as an individual Krishna. So just by this alone, Krishna is stressing the individuality of the Jivatma and also Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. The verse before begins. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. So the Supreme Lord is speaking about the individuality of himself and the individuality of the Jivatma, the soul, the conditioned soul. Now in this purport to this verse, there are some very strong, mighty arguments against Mayavad philosophy. So that was part of the homework. And if one understands these arguments, one will be able to preach against Mayavadi philosophy very strongly. So all the time, I was always Krishna, you are always Arjuna, always the individual who is now Arjuna, and all these kings are also individual. You in the present are individuals. In the future, we will also be individuals. It is not that if you are, Krishna is not saying, Arjuna, if you hear Bhagavad Gita from me and learn the science of the absolute truth, you were Arjuna in the past and now you are Arjuna, and later on, after you become pure, you will become Krishna. He is not saying that at all. So this Mayavad philosophy is directly against what Krishna is saying. Now what is the basic illusion that Arjuna has? Krishna is clearing that up by stressing the soul, not the body. Because Arjuna is on the battlefield and he's worrying about the death of Bhishma. He's worrying about the death of Drona and all the kings, but they are eternal. And this is the point that Krishna is stressing. So Arjuna may answer that, okay, the soul is eternal. But as far as myself, I am not relating to Bhishma as an eternal soul. Nor am I relating to Drona as an eternal soul. My relationship to them is with their bodies. He is my grandfather. He is my teacher in this body. So although they are eternal souls, if I kill them, they're going to change their bodies. And then it will be a horrible thing. Because my relationship is with their bodies. So then Krishna says, you think that if you don't fight in the battlefield, you'll be able to stop them from changing their bodies? This is illusion. Dehenos minyata dehe komaram jovanam dara tata deyantara praptiya dhiras tatra namuyate. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. A sober person is not bewildered by such a change. You are so afraid of changing Bhishma and Drona's body. You don't want to kill them, but what you mean to say is you don't want them to change their bodies. Arjuna, you cannot stop them from changing their bodies. They have already changed their bodies. That's like I remember Nandu, his first day at school. He was just 5 years old. And he was just like this Rupa Raghunath, his younger brother, little tiny pipsqueak. And he was sitting just right outside here. And now he has changed his bodies completely. Or he has changed his body so many times. He has changed from the Rupa Raghunath body to the Balaram body and then to the Nandu body. He has different stages. One cannot stop this change of body. And every one of us can experience the eternality of the soul through this simple sloka. Because we can remember our earliest memory. Maybe the first day at school when we were 5, or maybe something when we were 3, or maybe something when we were 7. What is the earliest you can remember, Janu?
I guess, I can actually remember the first.
You were 7. And what color was the room? Do you remember?
It was like yellow.
Yellow.
Muchi yellow.
Muchi yellow. That's a very unique color. And were you happy when you went to school that day?
No.
No. You cried?
No.
No. You were very tired. Huh?
Stunned.
And you can, what can you remember? What's the earliest memory you can remember, Rupa Raghunath? Around 6, what was that? You were on the beach. What were you doing? Crawling around on the beach. So, but it was you, right? It was you. The same person was crawling on the beach. The same person was in school. But if we would look at a picture of you at that time, we could not even recognize you. So you are the same. But your body has changed to such a degree that if we saw that body, we would not even know it was you. But you, the person within the body, has not changed. That identity, that feeling of I-ness, I was in school, I was crawling on the beach. Your mind has changed so many times. Your intelligence has grown. Your body has changed and grown up in so many ways, stronger. But you, the person, has not changed at all. Dhiras tattara namuyate. And the wise person, throughout all these changes of bodies, he is not confused into identifying this as himself. And as this is changing, he does not think that he is changing. He knows that he is eternal. And therefore, tatadeyantara praptiya, when the soul even leaves this body and enters a new body, we say that the body has died, or he has died, but actually he has not died at all. He has just left. Just like if we are in this room. We are in this room just like the soul is in the body. And if we leave this room to go to another room, like the soul leaves one body to go to another body, it is not that we die. Now, we are in a blue room, so does that mean we are blue? And if I go into my yellow room, now I am yellow. Or now I'm wearing white cloth, so I'm white. And if I put on a blue kurta, I am blue. No. This has nothing to do with me at all. This is the basic message, or the most simple point, philosophical point in the Bhagavad Gita. And it is the simplest of points, and the greatest of philosophers in the West don't have any concept of this reality. Although everyone experiences it. Everyone has this experience. Dehe knows minyata dehe. Everyone knows that they've changed their body so many times, but yet they have not changed. I have not changed. So there is no question of me dying, just like my identity has remained constant through all these changes of bodies. Similarly, when the final change of body happens, when I leave this body and go on to another body, still I remain the same. Dhiras tatra namuyate. Dhiras means the sober person. A sober person, you can define a sober person as one who is not intoxicated. An intoxicated person is one who forgets what is reality and he is in illusion. So the greatest intoxication, Prabhupada said, is this body. Compared to this body, all other intoxications are just spices. Salt and pepper, he said. This is the real intoxication, thinking that we are this body. And it is so deep. And therefore, because we think we're the body, we feel the connection with our family members. It is so deep. It is built into the body, these attachments. I remember one time when I was a Gita Nagari, I had been out of the United States for so many years, and my sister had a daughter who I never met before. And she came to visit us at Gita Nagari, and she was 13 or 14 years old. So that makes her my sister's daughter is my niece. So I had never met her before. And immediately there was affection. She is my niece. This is the nature of bodily attachment. It's complete illusion. But a sober person, he is not bewildered by the change of body, and he is also similarly not bewildered into thinking that he is the body. So that is Krishna's answer to Arjuna's doubt that my affection for Bhishma and Drona exists with their bodies, so I don't want to kill them and change their bodies. And Krishna said, you can't stop them from changing their bodies. They have already changed their bodies. And Bhishma now has an old body. And just like there is a story of Maharaj Jayati, who had an old body. And he was so much desirous of getting a young body so he can enjoy himself. So Maharaj Jayati, he got his younger body from, who did he exchange? Who exchanged youth with Jayati? Which son? Puru. So Puru gave him his youth, and Jayati had an old body and it became a young body. Did anyone lament? Oh, Jayati has lost his old body and he has gotten a young body. No one lamented. Jayati and everyone else were so happy to exchange an old, worn-out body for a young one is glorious in that sense. So therefore, Bhishma loses his body on this battle of Kurukshetra. By your arrows, he will change his old body for a younger one. So since no one lamented when Yayati changed his body from an old one to a young one, why should you lament if Bhishma is going to change his body from an old one to a young one? So in this way, Krishna is defeating Arjuna's doubts. So, so Arjuna can then say, okay, Krishna, you have made a good point that they will change their bodies. Bhishma will take on a new body, a young and vigorous one, and Drona will also take on a new, young and vigorous body. So, that will be very nice for them, but you haven't answered my question, that if they do this, my relationship is with their bodies, so I'm going to miss them very much. It's going to be a cause of great distress. I've known Bhishma ever since I was a young boy. He practically brought me up like a father. Drona taught me martial arts. I have so much affection for them. And if they leave this world, my heart is going to be broken. I'm going to be distressed. Where will my happiness come from? And Krishna's answer to that doubt of Arjuna is the next verse, which is also so famous. Matra spashas dikauteya sitoshna sugadukadaha agamapayeno anityas tamstitikshas vabharata. O son of Kunti. The non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O scion of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So yes, Arjuna, Krishna says, you will be distressed if Bhishma changes his body, and you won't have that same Bhishma to relate to. And you will be distressed if Drona changes his body, because you won't have Drona to relate to. But the stress and happiness come and go. Agamapayano anityas. They come and they go. Why? They are anitya. They are not eternal. They come like the winter and summer season. You cannot stop happiness and distress from coming and going. This is the very nature of the material world. It is built to sometimes give us distress. If it was only distress, we would get used to it and think that it is happiness. And if it was only happy, we would think it is wonderful. But in the material world, there is always happiness, distress, happiness, distress, happiness, distress. And therefore, one has to learn not to live on the platform of when there is happiness coming to me, something I like coming to me, oh, I am joyful. And then when something happens I don't like, oh, I am miserable. And then something happens we do like, oh, I'm happy again. And then something happens you don't like, oh. Up and down, up and down. Rather, Krishna says, don't pay any attention to the ups and downs of the material world. They come and they go according to your karma, like winter and summer season. Tamstatiksha. You must become tolerant. You must fix yourself in the knowledge that this has nothing to do with you. Just like if you get a nice coat, you shouldn't become happy because the coat isn't you. And then if your nice coat gets a rip in it, you shouldn't become unhappy because you're not getting a rip in you. It has nothing to do with you. So the happiness and distress of the material world has nothing to do with us, the soul within the body. And therefore, according to our karma, when the happiness and distress come, tams to tikshasvabharata, we just simply must learn to be tolerant and become fixed on the platform of intelligence, at least intelligence, knowing that we are souls, that we don't have anything to do with the happiness and distress of this world. Nothing whatsoever. But why do we feel happy when something good happens to our coat? And why do we feel miserable when something bad happens to our coat? It is due to attachment, illusory attachment, and the desire to squeeze some pleasure from the hats and coats of this material world. And my favorite example in this regard is what we call ahankar. Now ahankar, what does ahankar mean? Yes, but there is the modern meaning of it is, I am my car. So someone has a new car, and they're thinking, oh, if everyone should be looking at me as I'm driving along in my car. Just see, it is the newest, fastest car. And then, smacko! Some other car bangs into us, some old truck or something bangs into us. And we get out, you hit me! This is called ahankar. But actually, you didn't hit us. But we feel the distress as if he has hit us. As if we were hit, not the car. Why? Because we identify with that car. But if it is someone else's car that gets hit, we don't mind so much. We don't say, you hit me. We don't get so angry because it is someone else's. We don't identify with it. It is not the source of our pleasure. So similarly, all happiness and all distress in this material world have nothing to do with us. And we should learn decisively from the Bhagavad Gita that we should try to find our happiness on a different platform, which is the subject of the next verse. O best amongst men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, and is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation. So liberation means beyond the happiness and distress of this material world. It is a different type of pleasure. And depending upon one's spiritual consciousness, whether one is a jnani or an impersonalist, a brahmavadi, a paramatmavadi, or a bhakta, a devotee, he will get a different level of happiness. But this same principle is true whether we are mayavadi, brahmavadi, whether we are yogi meditating on the super soul within the heart, or a devotee, that we have to become steady and fixed in our activity and not be not this way and not that way and up and down by the happiness and distresses that come to us due to our particular karma in the material world. So if one learns to do his duty in a fixed manner, regardless of the happiness and distress, this is called nishkam karma. And this will be described actually in the third chapter and in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. This, again, the second chapter is the contents of the Gita summarized. So there'll be many, many topics brought up here in the fifth, in the second chapter that will be explained in more detail further. But the idea is that if one acts in a detached fashion, fixed in doing his duty, if one's karma is fixed in that way, one's activities are fixed or acting in a detached way, the result of that is going to be jnana, or knowledge. So karma yoga will lead to jnana yoga. This point will be described gradually in the first six chapters. And then the result of jnana is liberation. Now, Krishna is going, after explaining these simple points on how to get jnana through activity, through karma, Krishna is going to devote the rest of this section up to text 30 on describing jnana. Now, this jnana is usually achieved through an inactive path of yoga, either called jnana yoga or sankhya yoga, where one leaves his material activities far behind and goes to the forest, doesn't associate with anyone, just meditates, and using his intelligence, he separates himself. He's completely inactive, and he separates himself from the material world through his intelligence and comes to realize that he is not his body, but he is a spirit soul. Now this point, that jnana yoga or sankhya yoga is an inactive path, is very important to remember, and it will come up again in the third chapter, in the fifth chapter. So keep it in mind that this path of jnana, what we usually consider jnana yoga, is an inactive path. One leaves his duty. But Krishna is going to recommend Arjuna how to achieve that same jnana by doing your duty, by doing his duty through activity. And this is an essential question that actually will be discussed a little later also in the second chapter. Which is better, to leave one's duty to make advancement, or to maintain one's duty and do it in a detached way and make advancement in that way? This is one of the important questions of the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna begins to explain this jnana. And therefore, and those of you who have the Bhagavad Gita overview books will see that this section is entitled, or has something to do with jnana, achieving knowledge. Now the first verse is a very important verse in this. This is 16. This is the knowledge that one gets. It's a little hard to understand, but we'll try our best to explain it. Anasa to vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sata. Ubiyor api dristo untas, taneyas tatvadoshadi. Those who are seers of the truth, that's taneyas tatvadoshadi, those who have actually seen the truth, this is their conclusion. They've concluded that of the non-existent, of those things that don't exist, the material body, there is no endurance. And of the eternal, the soul, there is no change. They have concluded, this they have concluded by studying the nature of both. Now this means, in simple terms, that those things that are the seers of the truth, the rishis, the tattva-darshanis, those who have actually seen the truth have concluded that those things that don't exist eternally actually have no existence. And they will never exist. They will never become eternal. They will never exist. Those things that are changing will never exist. Because they're always changing. So how can they exist if they're always changing? And those things that always exist, like the soul, will never cease to exist. They are eternal and they always will exist. So it is actually, even though it is complicated to understand, is actually quite simple to understand. The things that exist will exist always eternally. That which is eternal will always be eternal, and that thing, and those things which don't exist, they will never exist because they are always changing. This is a very, it's actually some nyaya, some logic. One of the rules of logic is only from something that exists, only something else that can exist. Can be produced. And from truth, only truth comes. From falsity, only falsity comes. So those things that exist, they will always exist. And those things that don't exist, they will never exist. Therefore, this body will never exist. It is always changing. That's why we see that the picture in the Bhagavad Gita of the film, and we see it appears on the film. If we look at each frame of the film, we see that the body is actually changing its position. And if we look at the film very fast, it appears that there is actual continuity in the body. But actually, there is no connection between one frame and the next. But it is just our illusion that we see it is one. So we say that the body is growing, but it is actually not growing. It is changing. At every second it is changing. At every millisecond it is changing. So that thing, body that you are seeing right here, at this second, is a different body that you are seeing right now. And it's a different body, and it's a different body, and it's a different body. So there is no existence to it. So we think that the body exists, but it actually doesn't exist. This is the point here. And those things which actually do exist, they never change. And that is the soul. So the soul can never change, and it will always exist, and the body will never stay the same, and it will never exist. That is the point of this verse. To explain that even clearer, these two sides, that which exists will always exist, and that which never doesn't exist will never exist, the next two verses, 17 and 18, are spoken. First, those things that do exist. That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. So what is spread all over the body? It is consciousness. It is pervading the body. It is consciousness. The soul, through consciousness, pervades the body. And that thing exists. The soul exists. And no one is able to destroy this imperishable soul. This is jnana. It is philosophical. It is, begins on the intellectual platform. It takes great realization. It takes detachment to realize. And then,
In the next verse, this is the basic ABCs of spiritual life. The soul is eternal. It is pervading this body, which does not actually exist. So on one hand, the soul exists eternally, and it is pervading the body which doesn't exist. And text 18, on the other hand, the material body of the indestructible, immeasurable, and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharat. So, the body is always changing. It doesn't exist. It must die. The body must die. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you don't want to fight in this battle because you don't want your relatives, Bhishma and Drona and all the rest, you don't want them to die. But you should know that if you think that they are souls, you should know that they will never die because they are eternal souls. And if you think that they are the body, you should know that you cannot save them from dying because the very nature of the body is that it is destructible, it must die. So therefore you should fight. This is the message of these verses. Therefore fight, O descendant of Bharata, because the body must come to an end. If you run from this battlefield, do you think you can stop Bhishma and Drona from dying? Are you that foolish to think that if you don't take part in this battlefield, Bhishma will not die? And Drona will not die, and Duryodhana will not die, and Dushyant will not die? How foolish. That is looking at it from the body point of view. And then looking at it from the soul point of view. Arjun, do you think you can actually kill them? Even if you put 1,000,000 arrows into Bhishma's body and his body dies, he leaves the body. He, the eternal soul, will not die, so you cannot kill them. So either way, you should do your duty. That we just heard in the previous verse. A person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, and is steady in both, he does his duty in both. You cannot stop the body from dying, and you cannot make the soul die. So therefore, just simply do your duty. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata. Neither he who thinks that the living entity, the slayer, neither he who thinks the living entity, the slayer, nor he who thinks it's slain, is in knowledge, for the self slays not, nor is slain. So in other words, Arjuna is thinking, I don't want to be the slayer of Bhishma. I don't want to be the one who kills Bhishma. So if you think that you are the one who is slaying, you are the one who is killing, if you think I will kill Bhishma, you are an illusion. Because Bhishma, his body, it is not alive. So you cannot kill something that is not alive, and his soul cannot be killed. So you cannot be the killer of Bhishma. So don't think that you are the killer. So neither the subject can kill, nor can the object, neither Bhishma can be killed. So in either way, this is illusion. No slaying can be done, Krishna is telling Arjuna. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, don't think that you're the one who's going to do the killing, nor don't think that that the person who you are shooting with your arrows can be slain. So either way, do not think like that. That, if you think like that, that means you have no knowledge. You are in illusion. And here's an example to help us understand this. Krishna explains in 20. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. Further explanation of these points. For the soul, there is no birth or death. Na jayate mriyate va kadachya nayam budva babita vanabhuya. Ajo nityam, unborn, eternal. Shashvatayam parano. It is everlasting, and it cannot become old. Nahanyate hanyamane sharira. It is not slain when the body is slain. This is me. I am the soul. I am not born. When the body is born, I do not die. When the body dies, I am not the body. I am not white. I am not American. I am not male. This is not me. I am not the one possessing a boil on his nose. This all has to do with the body. It is not me. But due to the identification with the body, everything that happens to the body, I feel either pleasure or pain. And therefore, because life means, due to the nature of karma, you must get some pleasure and you must get some pain, there's so much suffering that comes to us due to this identification with the body, due to illusion, due to lack of knowledge. If we crack this illusion and stop acting as if we are the body, acting just trying to fill the bodily senses with different types of pleasures and trying to avoid all the pain that we can, if we act in this way, crack the illusion, then we can be steady and we will very quickly proceed on the path of liberation. For the soul, there is neither birth nor death. At any time, he has not come into being. But we're in such an unfortunate condition. When we are just little babies, everyone looks at us and smiles, and we look up, and just when we see big smiles in front of us, everyone goes, kuchi, kuchi, oh, isn't he cute? And we start thinking, yeah, I'm cute. I am cute. Look at how happy they are just to see me. How cute I must be. Holding you and wrapping you in nice clothes and something like that. And when you cry, everyone comes running, what's wrong, what's wrong? We immediately, from the earliest age, start identifying with that body. We look down and we see the legs, and we see the arms, we see the chest, we see our body, we see our toes, and we start from the earliest age thinking this is us. And we can't remember any time when this wasn't us. It is so deep. But there was no time that we were born, and there is no time that we can die. We have not come into being. We do not come into being, and we will not come into being. There will be no souls. Pop. Some religions think that when a baby is born, a soul comes into existence. This is actually the religious doctrine of some religions. But no! The soul is eternal. The soul inhabits the body. Eternal means eternally backwards in time and eternally forwards in time. We exist eternally. Unborn, he is not slain when the body is slain. Oh, Partha, how can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and immutable, immutable means cannot even change, it is what it is. The soul is what it is. Nasato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sata. Those things that can change, that are mutable, changeable, they don't exist, but the soul exists. It never changes. How could someone who knows this, how could he think that he is killing anyone or cause anyone to kill? He knows that the soul can never die, so what is the question of killing? It is only when we are illusion, identify with the body, that there is death. So this is the platform of jnana. Both devotees, yogis, and Brahmavadis all share this common understanding that we are not the body, we are eternal souls. And here's the example. Because Arjuna starts thinking, okay, I accept and understand that the soul is eternal. Okay. So I'll be shooting my arrows at so many people. I accept, I'll not kill anyone, but I'll be the cause of changing their bodies. That is a fact, isn't it? But Krishna tells Arjuna that you cannot stop this change of bodies from occurring even if you don't take part in the battlefield. And Bhishma's change of bodies is just like the change of clothes. So what is the problem? As a person, Vashamsi Jirnani Yata Bahaya Navani Vrnati Naro Parani Tata Sharirani Bahaya Jirnani Anyani Samyati Navani Dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. So Krishna tells Arjuna, don't worry. It is just like changing your clothes. If the clothes are old and worn out, we throw them away and put on new clothes. It is nothing more than that. Now, after this, Krishna is going to explain the qualities of the soul, and then he will change the topic, and we'll cover that tomorrow. Are there any questions up to this point? Yes.
How can one properly identify with the soul, since the soul is 10,000 parts of people over here? I mean, how can I imagine that and identify myself with the soul?
Right. But therefore, we talk more about you are not your body than you are a soul. And it is basically an intellectual adjustment until we are more advanced. With our intelligence, we can understand we are not the body. This is not us. And unless someone has spiritual vision, even if he had the most powerful of electronic microscopes that could see 1/10,000th the tip of a hair in size, he could not see the soul because it is spirit. It is spiritual. And we have to have that type of vision to see the soul. Spiritual vision. Want to go back?
A little earlier, we were speaking about Drona and Bhishma, how Arjuna was lamenting for them. Bhishma is such a incredible personality with so much wisdom and so much knowledge. How is it that such a small, insignificant thing as financial consideration is forcing him to do something that, like, the only thing that's keeping him, although he's a friend of the Pandavas?
It's not exactly financial consideration, although it is from one side. See, Prabhupada explains there are many different levels of explanation. So, just like we have said that the reason why Krishna fought with Arjuna was because on the side of Arjuna was because he sat up and Duryodhana asked for the armies and this and that. So that is true on the Mahabharata level. On another level, as Prabhupada explains, because out of family affection, Partha, son of Pritha, had a family affection for Arjuna. He was driving his chariot. So that's also true on another level. But actually, on the real level, none of those are true. So on different levels, something is true. Something may be true on one level and not true on another level. So the actual reason that Krishna fought is because he wanted to. He drove the chariot of Arjuna so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. It's Leela. Out of affection for his devotee, he took up the service of his devotee to teach us this. There's the element of the inconceivability of Krishna's desire, his sankalpa, his will. He wants to do things and he does them, and that's all. So similarly, we can answer the question, why did Bhishma fight on the side of the Kauravas? We can say that it was a financial consideration. But the other way to look at it is, because it's not exactly financial consideration, like he was being paid by the hour in the battle, but it was more the element in the Kshatriya nature that is dutiful, because he had been in Duryodhana's retinue and having been maintained by Duryodhana for so many years, as one of the members of the court. Therefore, when it came time for the battle, he was duty bound to fight on the side of Duryodhana. That's on that level. More like that than financial consideration. Also, Prabhupada said that it was due to him eating the grains from that place that contaminated his mind that forced him to fight on that side. Therefore, that was spoken so that we, to make sure that we avoid eating grains cooked by non-devotees. And on the ultimate level, not a blade of grass moves without the will of Krishna. So this idea that things are spoken on different levels, Westerners tend to like everything black or white. Well, here, is it this or is it this? But actually, it's many, very often many, many, many things on different levels. So we have to sort of, and sometimes we'll see in one purport, Prabhupada will say, Arjuna is a great exalted, has a great exalted character, and therefore it shows that he's a great devotee. And on the next purport, Prabhupada says he's just weak and sentimental. So we have to exact the point that is being made from on each of the purports and understand it on the level that it's spoken. And we have to get used to the fact that things, like different acharyas will say different things. And not even that it's on different levels, but the slokas of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, they are infinite. And there's an infinite ways of sweetly and properly explaining them. So we have to get used to that.
This verse, Nasato Vidhide Bhava, those things that are temporary don't exist. So,
and they will never exist.
So, Krishna consciousness, we use so many material things. Nibbanda, Krishna, Samande, Yukta, Varam, Yukta, renunciations to see everything material is also Krishna, so we use it in Krishna's service. So, I think most of us accept and understand that point. But given that, still, is there some precaution that we should take as devotees who perhaps, you know, too much absorption even in so-called fusing material things?
Of course.
In Krishna's service?
That we should make sure that we don't get attached to things for our own sense pleasure, and therefore the devotees should live simply. Because we can say, sometimes we say we're using it in Krishna's service, but in actuality we become attached to it because we're attached to it. So if we do that, we are the loser, because it will stop us from becoming attached to Krishna. So we always keep in mind what the goal is, that we want to become attached to Krishna. So we must hear about Krishna. We must cultivate our attachment to Him. And then, on the other side, naturally, Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar, that as the sun comes out, the darkness naturally goes. So similarly, as the attachment to Krishna comes, then naturally attachment to Maya drops. We preach against attachment to material things because we tend to be very attached to them. But actually, we should not become attached or detached to material things. We should be neutral towards the matter, thinking of it as Krishna's and simply use it in Krishna's service. So the byproduct, or the lesson from this, is that we should use things in Krishna's service. As Prabhupada said, that if we go on Sankirtan and collect money for Krishna, and we keep even one paisa for ourselves, it is so dangerous. Because it's meant for Krishna, and we are taking it. So similarly, we may keep 1%, which may try to squeeze 1% or 10% out of pleasure, out of everything, for ourselves. It is natural for a soul entrapped in the material world, but it will keep us in the material world. We have to become detached from Maya and attached to Krishna. If we try to independently become detached from Maya, we will not succeed. Because the nature of the soul is it wants to be attached to something, it needs attachment. This will come out later. We have to become attached to Krishna. That's actually the lesson. But the preaching will always be against sense enjoyment and using the elements of Maya in the service of the senses, because that will hurt us. Okay, let's stop now. So tomorrow do the...